For a lot of us, the best part of the school day when we were kids was recess. Just a half an hour or so running around and playing outside seemed to lighten the whole day. Our first guests this hour are big believers in recess, big enough to write and illustrate a book on the subject. It's called Recess, From Dodgeball to Double Dutch, Classic Games for Players of Today. Ben Applebaum is an author several times over with titles like The Book of Beer Pong, The Book of the Party Animal, and Turd Ferguson and the Sausage Party, among others to his credit. Dan DeSorbo has been right alongside for most of these ventures. Dan is the artistic side of the partnership in charge of a design company called PB&J Design. Ben Applebaum, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And Dan DeSorbo, good to hear from you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Ben, clearly you have not lost touch with your younger self. Was this book bound to happen?
Well, it was a great project for Dan and I, and Dan has written every step of it with me along the way, and it was a project that surprised us a bit. We thought we were going to start writing about adults playing recess games, since that's a new trend, and as the more we got into and realized the importance of recess and its list on the endangered species in terms of today's kids, we actually thought it was bigger, so it became a much bigger project, and it was really exciting for us.
On the endangered species list because the kids aren't taking recess or giving it, or just because they're not using they're not playing outside on their own?
It's a lot of things. Part of it is technology, and a lot of the playing, if you ask a kid what a game is, they're going to point to their iPhone or their iPad. But it's also the way we look at our education system. We've really squeezed out what looks like non-essential time, especially with things like No Child Left Behind. They've taken a different look at the school day. And in America, recess is shrinking and shrinking in terms of its part of the day, and it's being played less and less. So that actually became one of the rallying cries as we started getting into this project, is it's really a lot more of a significant, beneficial time than most people would probably think.
Dan DeSorbo, who is the book for then?
Well, the book is for, anyone, really. We like to think that, kids, typically have their recess allocated to them for hopefully 30 minutes. But also, on the back end, I think it's good for parents or any young adult or even, grandparent to, take a break, have fun, and enjoy themselves.
Talk about researching the games and the rules, because there's a lot of stuff in here. I wonder how quickly this got beyond your own memories of playground games and their rules.
Yeah, a lot of it was pretty interesting. It started off with Ben and I just brainstorming of all the the games we would play as kids, and then talking to older generations, talking to them about the games they played, and from there we started sort of compiling and organizing as many games as we could that we thought were relevant for today's players. And at the same time, we also reached out to, recess experts in terms of the particular game. So kickball, dodgeball, foursquare, believe it or not, there's competitive social leagues out there. So we reached out to the heads of those organizations as well to get their input on some of these games.
Recess experts. I think I just found my next career. Tell us about that, Ben.
Yeah, so for example, Foursquare, there's a gentleman out of Massachusetts. He runs kind of the world championships of Foursquare. And, people from around the world come to Massachusetts once a year, and then they play some competitive and fun Foursquare. So he had, rules that spanned generations and actually regions of the country where, when you think you're playing Foursquare, well, it's a little bit different if you're playing in Ohio versus, New York. So with his help, we actually broke out the sort of the basic rules of the game and then included, 30 variations that you can try at home to, make the game a little bit more fun or a little bit harder, a little bit easier. So it's just interesting to see how one game can kind of turn itself into, 20 or 30 games.
I hadn't thought about the fact that there'd be regional differences, but I guess it stands to reason if a kid transferred from New Mexico to New Jersey, for example, he'd find somewhat different rules for the playground games.
Yeah, exactly. So another part of our research was actually, so now that we had these games, well, the way I play kickball isn't the same as, somebody else. So, we wanted to sort of lay out those fundamental universal rules at first. So, anybody who plays kickball, there are basic guidelines you need to follow. And then we included a whole separate section of, you know, all these either regional variations, alternates, you know, fun add-ons that, you know, before the internet, these things were spread by word of mouth. So, you know, the reason why they are regional is, you know, if I'm in Connecticut and, you know, we play kickball, well, you know, the way we play is only going to go maybe outside our neighborhood, maybe to a few more neighborhoods. So kind of compiling all this sort of opens the door for all these fun variations of all these classic games.
Now, I notice you even have an acronym here for Recess. Tell us about, was this your own creation?
Yeah, so Ben and I mean, for all our books, actually, it's just something we do. We just like acronyms for some reason. We do it in almost every one of our books. And, yes, and for Recess, you know, we were playing around with the acronyms. And, I mean, just using the word recess itself made sense. So, you know, recess is respect, effort, competition, exercise, social, and safety.
Okay. Safety first, though, you pointed, even though it is the final S.
Right. It's the final one, but, we, you know, we always like to say safety first. So, you know, a lot of times these games have, like, for example, dodgeball gets a bad rap because people think, oh, my God, you're going to get so hurt. But in reality, you know, the way the game is supposed to be played, it's not that dangerous.
All right. I was going to ask about a dodgeball at the end, but let's go there now. How do you get that game from getting too mean?
Well, I mean, I don't want to say it gets mean. I want to say sometimes it maybe gets competitive.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, depending on the group you're playing with, I can see where people think, okay, well, you're going to pick on the weakest player. Again, we feel as a kid growing up, you do go through some growing pains. So if you are the weak link in the dodgeball and you do get out first, well, you know, we encourage you to still make that effort. But at the same time, we also like to tell players and let them know that, you know, you shouldn't be a bully. You should be competitive, but not a bully.
Okay, we'll talk about the difference between competitive and being a bully. That's well set out in the book. We'll talk more with Ben Applebaum and Dan DeSorbo about their book, Recess, From Dodgeball to Double Dutch, Classic Games for Players of Today. Back on the Exchange with our guests and your phone calls and emails in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Ring the bell and let's hear the kids scream. It is recess time. We are talking about recess for kids, for adults, for anybody who really wants to have about a half an hour outside to run around and play. It's what we got to know in elementary school, but apparently adults are turning to it as well. Ben Applebaum and Dan DeSorbo have written a book called Recess, From Dodgeball to Double Dutch, Classic Games for Players of Today. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Maybe talk about your favorite recess games when you were a kid, or maybe things you've started playing again now. 800-838-3760 for your questions and comments. By phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Okay, we're just talking about how not to to turn the edge from competition into bully. What are some of the ways in which you can differentiate between those two guys?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest thing is competition is about the game, and bullying is about personal, hurtful. They make it about the people as opposed to about the game. So if it's about the competition, it can be competitive, it can be rough and tumble, but when it gets into singling out individuals, when it's trying to really make somebody feel superior outside of the game, that's when it crosses the line. But we do believe, especially in today's kind of world of helicopter parents and everything, it's okay to learn how to lose. It's okay to fall down and scuff a knee. It's okay to have physical contact. Kids can wrestle and can have and can get dirty without it crossing that line to becoming something that belittles a play or makes them feel like it becomes a personal attack. So we're proponents of some appropriate competitive rough and tumble play.
Well, which raises a question about specifically what you just said about the age of helicopter parents, whether some of these games have lain fallow for years because parents and schools don't want the kids playing them anymore.
Yeah, they definitely have. Like we talked before, dodgeball in a lot of cases has fallen out of favor. Some of those are parental decisions, but some things are institutional. We kind of have a little tribute to recess equipment that isn't there anymore. Those slides that got so hot on days and would launch you far into the distance. Even something as simple as tetherball has really fallen out of favor. And some of that stuff is just from maintenance and from school districts, and some of it is more parent-driven. But it's interesting how things come in and out of favor, and we're hoping that we kind of find a sensible balance where we can have games that have some contact. You can have games that everything has some precautions. We definitely don't want anybody to ever get hurt. But there are a lot of games that have kind of fallen out of favor that we really think still have a place in our world.
Okay, even if the kids won't play them, certainly adults might. Give us an idea of how widespread you're finding the adult recess movement to be.
So, I mean, going back to kickball, I know there's the group that we worked with on sort of outlining the world of kickball. They have a national and international adult league where there's, you know, thousands of players just enjoying themselves, you know, almost like a softball league, but now it's, you know, kickball. And I think the nostalgia is what's drawing the adults back there, and also I think the fun aspect of these recess games, it's a more of like a unique social bond you get rather than, you know, when you're thinking of a traditional, I guess, softball league or bowling league. You know, when you're thinking of you're playing recess, it's a lot more lighthearted, it's more fun, it's a lot less stressful. So I think that's what's drawing these adults back into some of these games.
The kickball in particular, I've noticed on the rise, where you used to see different companies challenging each other to softball games, they seem to be turning into kickball games now. Is that partly because the level of expertise required is somewhat less? Pretty much anybody can kick a ball pretty hard?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree with that. I think the kind of the all-inclusiveness of these games is where you're kind of hitting the nail on the head. So, for example, kickball, I mean, I would think most people who are, you know, not handicapped can, you know, kick and run a baseline. I mean, that's really the principles of the game, catching and throwing. So these really basic sort of physical activities, it includes a much broader range of, you know, ages, sexes, backgrounds, rather than, you know, being really specific to you know, like you mentioned, a softball, where I guess it's a little more skilled, it's a little more competitive, it's a little more aggressive, I would say.
And we're talking about it's the adolescent kind of mentality. This is a generation that has read comic books well beyond their childhood years, plays video games well beyond those years too. So we found adult thumb wrestling leagues in bars all over the country. There's just something fun about, and even most cereals consumed by adults now. Kids are eating less cereal, and top cereals are consumed by adults now. So there is that reliving your childhood. There is the innocence. There is in the world where you have to put on so many airs and project yourself to kind of recall those days when you could be a little more wild, a little more free. We see a lot of these games coming back, really they recall those fondness of yesteryear.
We're talking to Ben Applebaum and Dan DeSorbo on the Jefferson Exchange. They've written a book called Recess, From Dodgeball to Double Dutch, Classic Games for Players of Today. Got lots of illustrations, too. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Connie and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm all for the exercise. We were very lucky in my school. I'm 65, so we all walked or biked to school. Then we had a morning recess, then recess after lunch, and then walking or biking home and playing. So there was an enormous amount of exercise. But one question I had is about the games that we played that were not actually exercise, and that is marbles. And I know you're emphasizing exercise, but that was terrific because it was hand-eye skill, it was strategy, there was, you know, competition and things like that, but it was a really fun game, and people learned how to concentrate, focus. It's a terrific game for playing, especially if you have some dirt area or something that you can clean away. So
yeah, I actually love that you mentioned marbles. We actually have a whole chapter, we call them dexterity and mental games. So while doing the research on those games, I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old at home, and you know, I tried to play as many of these games as I could. Obviously, I couldn't play all of them, but for some reason, I mean, as a child, marbles was not anything I've ever even thought of playing, but while I was playing marbles, my two sons were in love with the game. So there is something to be said for that, you know, easy, quick game that, you know, it's not, you're not running around, you're not out there, but you're actually still having a fun challenge. and for some reason marbles just hit a chord with my kids, and we still play almost daily.
Is this sort of like chess or checkers for the kids who are not quite old enough for those games?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, we do try to play some board games, but yes, the idea of, for those, I think it's a little more, you know, strategy, whereas I think a marbles is, you know, it's a quick hand-eye, quick gesture, and you're playing a game. There's a very quick, I guess, satisfaction of, you know, hitting that marble and watching it fly across the table or wherever you're playing.
All right, yeah, the stuff that you guys get into everything in this book, even how to toss the coin for who goes first. Why do you say we should call tails most of the time?
Well, the head side of the coin is actually slightly heavier, so statistically, that it will actually land the head facing down more. So that gives you a slight, very subtle advantage over the competition, because we know it's all about getting those firsts. So we even have some hacks on how to improve your rock, paper, scissors chances, because we know it's so critical to have that extra advantage. And also, that's part of the most fun part of the game sometimes, is deciding who goes first.
Let's talk about those hacks. You turned rock, paper, scissors into rock, paper, scissors, Spock, lizard. Explain the two additions there.
Yeah, so that game was actually invented by a gentleman by the name of Sam Cass, and it gained, like, viral popularity. So we just had to include it. So basically, you have the traditional rock, paper, scissors, but then you add that Spock sign and then a lizard sign. So you actually up the – there's actually five variations. So it actually makes the game itself a little more challenging, and to be honest, the lizard eating people is pretty fun too.
So how does Spock beat people? What does Spock beat, and what beats Spock?
Yeah, so Spock, it vaporizes the rock, and it bends the scissors. Yeah, and then the lizard actually poisons Spock, and it eats up the paper.
Wow. Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
Everybody's still got an adversary who can beat them, and several that they can beat as well.
Yeah. For the regular version of rock, paper, scissors, we thought it was incredible that most of the more competitive players will throw rock first. So if you're going up against somebody that's really hyped and aggressive, you know that they're more likely going to throw a rock. You can already have one step ahead of them to make sure you win your outcome.
All right. And now when you get to things like picking people for teams, I remember this could be brutal in elementary school. How not give a complex to the last one or two people picked for a team?
Well, one of the things that we really encourage is choosing the team is almost like choosing your stock portfolio. You want to have it diversified and not to assume that the smallest person is going to be the weakest link. There's games that need speed. There's games that need hand-eye coordination. If you think about your fully well-rounded team, it really does start with the that more inclusive approach, which is the difference in this really healthy, fun, competitive side, and not having to become crossing the line. But you know, I was often last picked, and especially if it's coming from a place of this is a fun time together, and it's less about keeping score, more about being together. Then it's once you get all on the court or on the field together, then nobody remembers who was last. You're thinking about more of yourself than anybody else.
We're talking about the games of Recess with the authors Ben Applebaum and Dan DeSorbo, who've written Recess, From Dodgeball to Double Dutch, Classic Games for Players of Today. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The first games you put in here are you call them digital, but not electronic, so they're hand games. Ben, you claim to be the retired hand slap champion. Tell us about your victories.
Yeah, you know, it was a long career, and I'm very proud of the accomplishments. I have a lot of affinity, maybe because I was often the last picked player for some of the more physical games. I was a very small child. I've always loved the hand games. I think there's something pure that you don't need any equipment. They're portable. The plain hand slapped or hot hands, people call it different things. I remember playing that with my dad, and you could play with people in line getting ready to go to recess, and especially hand slap, which is that simple game where one player is trying to slap the other player's hands, the other one wants to remove it. To me, it has all the perfect elements of a game. You have strategy, you have offense, defense, you have two people face-to-face, so it has that level of intimacy, but also has a level of pain and just a little bit of threat, and nobody's going to get hurt. You're not going to go to the nurse's office. But just having that element of a little bit of risk that you can have that stingy slap in the back of your hand, to me, that is all you need to have the perfect game. You don't have to plug it in. You don't have to download it. It's all ready to go.
You get into thumb wrestling, too. And, Dan, it looks like you particularly had fun with designing the game face section of this.
Yeah, so we had some fun making a little game face. So we had a lucha libre, or we like to call it a lucha thumbre. So you make a little Mexican wrestler.
You make a face on your thumbs.
On there. Yeah, we show some examples on there.
Oh, this is fun stuff here. Now, so there's a game I haven't seen here before. What is finger jousting?
Finger jousting is a newer game in the canon of Recess games, and it's a little bit like thumb wrestling, but believe it or not, with your finger, and it's a little more full body. So it has some elements of fencing actually in it, and we found a gentleman who is a military service member who is a huge proponent of the game, and he actually has his own federation, and he's codified the rules. And it was a kind of a small Midwest game that I think he really has been championing, and we thought it was important to include. It's not a household name, but it's important to show that some of the games, we have the classics and want to have the ones that people forgot, but this is still evolving, and kids are playing, not enough, but they are playing, and we want to show that there's an evolving contemporary tradition in Recess games. So it's a newer one. I would hope everybody checks out finger jousting. It may be the next big thing.
So it sets up sort of like thumb wrestling, but you're using your index fingers. The point is to try to touch your finger to the other person's body, and their object is to keep yours off of theirs.
Yeah, kind of like the classical fencing jousting style. And it's not about brute strength. There's a lot of finesse and really who can kind of bring their finger saber back into their opponent. And this is light poking. It's mostly on the forearms, and it's not a violent sport by any means. It may sound worse, but I encourage parents to read it before they tell somebody they can't play it.
Any safety equipment required? I can see a few eye pokes potentially coming out of this.
Eye poking is strictly prohibited. We recommend well-clipped nails to be at least the biggest precaution.
Good point there. Let's take another call. Here's Joseph in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with the authors of Recess, Ben Appelbaum and Dan DeSorbo.
Yeah, hi. Hey, thank you. I got to say that I really like this conversation, and I want to kind of put a political spin on it. We kind of are saying, oh, this is something we used to do as kids, and so now we're being kids again. And I'd like to see us, you know, instead of looking at it that way, say that these are more of skills we learned as kids, and we just brought them with us. You know, our older generations, especially men, there are things that we just don't do as men. You know, we're not supposed to do that. But I think it's great that we carry those playful skills along. Like, I have a 2.5-year-old and an 8-year-old niece, 2.5-year-old daughter and 8-year-old niece, and I'll be out in the park doing handstands, and I call it bucking Bronco, but they'll get on my back, and I'll try to buck them off, and you never see any other guys doing that with their children. And, you know, granted, I'm definitely careful so I don't break limbs when I do it, but you just don't see the playfulness much. And I'm really glad to hear us talking about this kind of thing where older, you know, grown-ups are doing these playful things. But I'd like to see us move away from the, oh, we're just having our little bit of, you know, reminiscent or nostalgia to more of, hey, this is a skill that we learned, and we're bringing it with us because we're skill builders, you know.
All right, sounds fair. Anyway, thanks for that, Joseph. Appreciate that. So, Ben or Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of agreeing. I mean, I feel like there's been this pressure put on newer parents, and I don't know where that comes from, but the idea of this, you know, horsing around with your kids is unacceptable. I mean, that doesn't resonate with Ben or myself. I mean, we're the same. We like to goof off at home. We like to goof off with our kids. I mean, there is a time to be serious. We get that, but I mean, when you're just trying to enjoy yourself and having a good time, and especially if you're at an actual playground, I mean, there's no need to be stressed out about children playing. I mean, it's about letting loose and just having fun.
Let's finish with the stickball, which you call the crown jewel of urban sport. For folks who don't know the game, how's it played?
Yeah, so stickball, I mean, it's really simple. I mean, it's a ball of some sort. Typically, it's one of those pink little rubber balls that, you know, hopefully most people will recognize. And the stick itself is usually just a broomstick with the broom part cut off. and the idea of it is similar to, you know, a baseball where the ball gets thrown. Depending on your skill level, sometimes the ball is actually bounced first. That makes it a little bit easier. And then the idea is just to try to smack the ball with the stick, and instead of running bases, since this is stick ball, we play in the streets, you run to, you know, the car that's parked on the side would be first base, or the sewer cover would be third base. You just kind of use your element and make a makeshift field.
And you got to have the electrical tape. You got to have the electrical tape handle on the bat, don't you?
Yeah, you need that grip on there.
I love that you guys include home run celebration techniques in here, too, as if this even needs to be taught. But so much fun in the book. It's called Recess from Dodgeball to Double Dutch, Classic Games for Players of Today. Ben Applebaum and Dan DeSorbo wrote it and joined us on The Exchange. Gentlemen, thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
All right, take care.